How is confessional Lutheranism similar to and different from American evangelicalism, Roman Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is titled Being Lutheran. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. Save $2 by ordering Being Lutheran during the month of May. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Being Lutheran.
What we have in the Donald Trump phenomenon, as well as in the Hillary Clinton phenomenon, is an embrace of the very kind of moral and cultural decadence that conservatives have been saying for a long time is the problem.
People are busy, 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 but they've still got time to sit down and rewatch 666 episodes of Game of Thrones.
So we are very much an end times people, an apocalyptic people, and I think the more that we recover that, the more we'll be prepared to, with integrity, face the darkness of the present age and not lose our minds.
Confessional Lutheran deadheads love Issues Etc.
It's not an unpopular view of Jesus. He came to basically set right all the wrongs in our society. Now, the wrongs of the society into which he was born were many. It was a brutal society, although it was the peak of civilization in many ways compared to what had come before and what would come shortly afterward. Today, many of the same problems that we have in society are still there. Often they're viewed as mere problems of an unequal distribution of something. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's power. More often than not, really, it's power, because money just stands in for power, doesn't it? Did Jesus come to change all that? Did he come to equally distribute the power so that no one was above or before or first or after anyone else? An egalitarian society, revolutionize the world to make it an egalitarian society? Well, let's just say this. If he did, just to deal with society's ills and redistribute the power, he failed, didn't he? Completely, because it's just as bad as it was when he came. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be responding to liberal proof texts for the first part of these 2 hours with Dr. Jeff Gibbs, dealing with Matthew 20 and Matthew 23. Does Jesus teach that the church, the family, the society, the home are to be radically egalitarian? After our conversation with Dr. Gibbs, Rebecca Curtis joins us. She's authored a recent article for Touchstone magazine titled Emancipated Serf, pointing out some of the unintended consequences of the first wave of feminism. That's the good wave of feminism, by the way. The second and the third got worse and worse, but there were unintended bad consequences for society. We'll find out what they are in about 25 minutes here on Issues Etc. Then in hour two of Issues Etc., we'll review the movie Captain America Civil War. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest, and we'll round it all off doing our series Christ in the Old Testament. Since Pentecost approaches, we'll talk about the pouring out of the Holy Spirit in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions and your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line is always open, 618-223-8382. Joining us to respond to some liberal proof text, Matthew 20 and 23, Dr. Jeff Gibbs. He's a regular guest, professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Matthew. Dr. Gibbs, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be back.
Jesus is often kind of, he's recruited for the revolution. People have done this throughout history. Did Jesus come to revolutionize society?
Absolutely.
How so? I knew you were going to say that. How so?
Yeah, I knew that you knew that I was going to say that. Well, he came to inaugurate, to begin, to bring the reign of God. Right? And of course, the reason why the reign of God had to come into the world, as the prophets had promised, you know, many times and in many ways, is because the world is broke, right? So So Jesus comes. Jesus is sent to reestablish God's way of reigning in the world according to God's truth, God's standards, God's desires, right? Now, the day is coming when every valley will be lifted up, every mountain and hill be laid low, the rough places made plain, etc., etc., the mighty cast down from their thrones and the lowly exalted. We call it the Judgment Day, right? A day of perfect justice, and all will be put right, and Jesus will be the judge on that day. Now, the hard part about it is that he's already begun that work, but he's doing it in a very, very, very odd and unexpected way. And it's very inefficient. As you said in the introduction, you look at the world around us, it doesn't look like he's done any good. But he's God, he gets to decide. So until the judgment day, Jesus is in the business of transforming things, but not through political power, not through voting, but through words and love and a community that lives under his reign.
So what we're dealing with here is an end goal that will look an awful lot like what the so-called revolutionaries think Jesus came to do.
Well, in some ways, yeah. I don't know if that's why they're called utopian visions, right? Because they can't ever make it happen, and when the harder they try, the worse they make it, right? But you have to let Jesus decide when he's going to do that and how he's going to do it.
Give us some context on, let's see, Matthew 20. Here are the words, and I'd just like you to give us some context before we get into it. Tell us what he is saying before we go on to try and answer some of the things he absolutely isn't saying. But
sure.
Jesus called them, that is the disciples, and said to them, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many." A little context before we get into those particular words.
Well, yeah, just earlier in the chapter, after Jesus, for the third major time in Matthew, has said that he's going to Jerusalem to suffer, die, be crucified, and then be raised on the third day. Then Mrs. Zebedee and her two boys approach Jesus, apparently trying to gain access to special places of power and influence with Jesus. You know, she says, "Grant that these two sons of mine may sit one on your right and one on your left in your kingdom," right? And, of course, Jesus says, "You don't know what you're talking about," and they think they do, but they don't. And then the ten are indignant with the two, with James and John. So it's in that context of competition, of comparison, of jockeying for power, right? In a kind of a normal worldly way, power understood. It's in that kind of a context that Jesus says, no, there's power and greatness, all right, but I've redefined it, right? If you want to be first, you're last. If you want to be great, you're servant. It's into that context that Jesus' teaching is specifically directed.
I've always been curious about this, and I've noticed it both in Matthew and Mark, that Jesus no more than finishes predicting his death. And as you said, he does it three major times in Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Then the disciples start arguing about who is greatest. And
it's unbelievable.
My private theory is that they're like, okay, he's going to die. Sounds like bad news, but you know we're going to survive, so we got to figure out who's going to take his place.
Yeah, it's an excellent question, Todd, and nobody knows the answer. I mean, your guess is as good as anybody's, right? But I do think that the gospel writers give us this, or I think they're inspired to give it to us in the sequence, just to show how shocking a thing it is for the Son of God, Jesus the Messiah, to be Messiah, to show his divine sonship in this way. See, the hard part is not that Jesus is going to be king, it's how, right? It's how he's going to do it, right? And he decides. And of course, we know some of the reasons why he will suffer and die, because the Bible gives them to us. But that very sequence of first comes defeat, then comes victory, right? First comes death, then comes life. I mean, this is not the way a king normally does stuff. And so it's the how that trips them up and finally causes them all to flee, right, on the night that he's betrayed.
The reason I ask that, Dr. Gibbs, is because Jesus seems to indicate in the way he answers them here, especially the way he ends, even as the Son of Man.
Yes.
Is that the disciples, really everybody, Mrs. Zebedee too, they don't get Jesus. And that's why the greatness question
right.
always follows.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And it's odd. It's they are disciples, right? We would call them believers at this point, right? And so they know that God is reigning through him and through no one else. He's the guy. He's the designated one, right? In chapter 16, it's revealed to Peter, presumably the others, by God the Father, that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, right? But again, it's how? And it's so inefficient, and it's so... So your opening question, you know, has Jesus come to revolutionize, you know, repair society, the world? The answer is absolutely, right? Because the God who made the heavens and the earth hates injustice, right? He hates poverty. He hates crime. He hates all these things, see? But he's not going to do it through political power, although the church... will speak to political power, right? But as soon as the church starts using the instruments of force and political power to accomplish God's ends, the church has stopped acting like the church.
So let's talk a little bit about the authority that he describes. They exercise authority.
Yeah.
And this is not an intrinsic evil. I mean, Paul will tell us that the Gentiles exercising their authority, how they do it is one thing, but the fact that they do it is not intrinsically evil.
No, God set it up that way, right?
Is he contrasting the how, then? How the authority, not that there is no authority, that we're all kind of autonomous,
mm-hmm.
But that the authority now is exercised in an entirely different way?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, these are huge questions, and there's lots of different angles on them, but, you know, it will not be so among you, right? So again, the church. Well, I read an interesting book on the. It was a study of the Book of Acts recently, and the writer suggested this. He said, in Acts, ecclesiology—that is how the church manifests itself—is public Christology. And I think I'm not quite sure all of what the author meant by that, except to say that. The church's life is shaped by the life of Jesus, right? Which is to say a life of suffering, of willingness even to die for those who need it, that is to say everyone, right? Again, not to resist the evildoer, right? You know, he turned not his face from spitting, right? And so we are called to follow in the way of the cross, right? To take up our cross and follow him, and to be a society, a group of people who are gathered around Jesus. Of course, today we do it especially in the ways that he's promised to be among us, his word, his promise, his sacraments, and so forth. So here we are gathered around Jesus, and we're called to be a different kind of group within the world. Obviously, we have citizenship and all those other important things, but the church as church, right? It shall not be so among you. And then we pray that others will see a different way of approaching authority, for instance, right? And ask questions and come close enough to where we can say, well, yeah, this is why we do it this way. This is why among us the greatest is a servant, right? And the last is first, and so forth.
The way he puts that is kind of a, I don't know, it sounds a little bit like a catch-22, because whoever would be, how does he say it exactly?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever would be great among you must be the servant. Whoever would be first must be your slave.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's just the sinful nature's reading of this. You say, okay, I do want to be great. I want to be the greatest of all time. So I'm going to take the downward path to greatness. But in the end, I'll still be great.
Yeah.
In the end, I'll still be first, so it'll be worth it. That's how we read that, but I can't imagine that's how Jesus means that.
Yeah, right. You're right. He is offering something of a paradox. But as I, you know, if someone came to me and said, "Can I get away with that?" I'd say, "Knock yourself out, give it a try." Because if you actually tried to be a servant, I think it would kind of knock the poop out of you. Am I allowed to say that on the radio? Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine with me.
And you would learn the lesson, right? So if you try the way of Jesus without the heart that Jesus requires, if I could say it that way, you'll either stop trying the way or you'll find that he's given you the heart, if that makes sense. But you're right. It is kind of funny. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'll be twice as humble as you are, Todd, so that I can be exalted twice as high, right? Yeah, something like that. So,
one more question before we take our break on this particular text, and that is, I think there are those who would read this that kind of Jesus has come to revolutionize society, but he wants, our job is to inaugurate that reign of God by redistributing power and authority in the world in such a way so that no one has too much or everyone has equal amounts. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, that's fine. I would say that's fine, and it could even be on some human levels, a noble desire, right? But the question is, how are you going to do that? See, you could do it this way. You could say, you're a wealthy person, right? Now, please come follow Jesus, and since you have so much wealth, would you go ahead and sell all that you have and give it to the poor, please? Right? And then the person might say, well, yes, actually, I think I will freely do that because I belong to Jesus. That's a far cry from legislation, right? From, again, the church doesn't operate through coercion in that political sense. I think it was Wesley who is known for advocating as one. A lot of people, not everyone, as they get older, they make sort of more and more money. You know, we talk about peak earning years and so forth. He suggested that as you grow in your ability to make money, that you try to keep your standard of living the same so that you have more to give away, right? And I think that's a Christian, that's a very Christian way of thinking, right? But that's not at all the same thing as let's legislate socialism in the classic sense, where the government owns the means of production, right? And then you kind of operate that way as a government. That isn't even in the mind of Jesus at all, I don't think.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest on this Thursday, May the 12th. We're responding to liberal proof text, dealing here with Matthew 20, 25 through 28. When we come back, we'll talk about another passage. There, does Jesus teach that home and state and family and church are to be radically egalitarian? When we come back, we'll look at Matthew 23, beginning at verse 8. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
How is confessional Lutheranism similar to and different from American evangelicalism, Roman Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is titled Being Lutheran. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. Save $2 by ordering Being Lutheran during the month of May. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Being Lutheran.
Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Matthew. We're responding to liberal proof texts, a few from Matthew. That's why we have him alongside. Here's the other one. This comes from Matthew 23. And again, if you would, a little context. It starts at verse 8. And Jesus kind of picks up in the middle of the thought. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all brothers. And call no man your father on earth, for you have one father who is in heaven. Neither be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Christ. The greatest among you shall be your servant. Now, I believe that you are actually called instructor, Dr. Gibbs. That's one honorific title. There's also, I think, attached to your name, Reverend and Doctor, which means teacher. So you are really running afoul of Jesus at this point.
Well, yes. I would say two things, Todd. One is we sort of take all of the teaching of the New Testament together, you know, as a harmonious whole. It's sometimes difficult to know how precisely to fit everything together. And so we have Paul, who names himself an apostle, for instance, right, which is a title. The elders who teach well are to be given double honor, you know, from the pastoral epistles and so forth. So I think it is possible to over-literalize Jesus' teaching. On the other hand, and I'm just going to I'm just going to read something that I've written, but I haven't published yet. And here's kind of what I think. It doesn't seem too much to say that every use of an honorific title among Jesus' disciples carries with it the danger of sin, much as the presence of wealth automatically brings with it a situation of temptation. See, I do actually think that we could take Jesus' words a little more seriously here, because he's criticizing the Pharisees who love the greetings in the marketplace, right? And they love to be called rabbi. And by the way, this assumes that it's happening. I mean, the Pharisees, as we know, are a fairly widely respected group, right? And so they love it when that happens, see? And so every time somebody calls me Dr. Gibbs, right? See, there's a tiny, maybe not so tiny, spiritual danger there that I would come to love that. And even worse, that I would come to respect it, to expect it, see? And so I do think there's a danger here for those who are, it's kind of like, let not many of you become teachers, my brothers, right? James 3. So it's interesting. It's just a little thing, and maybe I'm just being stupid here, but I've taken to, you know, I get way more respect here on the seminary campus than I deserve. Okay, let's just say that. And the students do. They call me and my faculty colleagues by these titles, which in itself is fine. Okay, I'm not saying that that's inherently evil. But I just decided that I would start signing my emails without a title. So when I send an email to a group of students, I just sign it Jeff Gibbs. I don't want to make a big deal about it, you know, da-da-da-da-da, but I just decided it was good for me. And you know why, Todd?
Why?
Because it stung a little bit. That's why. Because I wanted to put Dr. Jeff Gibbs.
Well, you worked hard for that, didn't you?
Well, I did, as a matter of fact. Oh, wait. It's not, Todd. It's not mostly Deo Gloria, right? See? So I do think that Jesus is highlighting a danger here. It's just a human danger, right? We all know this. And so I have actually thought about this one, and I think we need to maybe, you know, I just cringe sometimes at all of the hype and the celebrity, America's a celebrity culture, right? And we, you know, let's see, how many synodical presidents have I been aware of? Goes back to Jack Preuss, right, back in the 70s. You know, I need to pray for every one of those men, every district president, right, every leader who is, by virtue of being a leader and being respected, in danger, say, of thinking more highly of himself than he ought to think, right, and to coming to the place where I love it when people say that to me.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about a situation that prevails, and it happens at every institution of higher education, like this seminary, our two seminaries. There's this moment of pomp and circumstance that ends every school year, where you are going to be asked to don your robes that you really are only allowed to wear because of, you know, the years that you have served doing this. Your little caps and all the things, and there'll even be, I imagine, honorary titles distributed. Yeah. So
yes, there will be. Yes, there will be.
And I'm what I'm trying to figure out is, and I think you're quite right in saying it's probably best to really accept and distribute those things with extreme caution.
Yeah, it is. And this will be the last time you ever invite me on the show, Todd. First of all, the seminary, both seminaries, the university, they are educations of higher learning, right? So, but on the other hand, they're institutions of the church, right? So here's the deal. I'll just say this. You'll never ask me back. I always vote against all the honorary degrees. I vote against them. I think the church has no business doing that. Say, now, every single one of my colleagues disagrees with me. And you know what that means? I'm probably wrong. That's what that means. So I try not to be a jerk about it, but it bothers me. It bothers me. And these are Christians. These are beautiful people filled by the Spirit who have worked hard, and through Christ's mercy and benefit, they have been a blessing to others. And I get all that, you know. It just bothers me. But so I'm probably wrong, and that's why I'm not a jerk about it.
We'll still have you back. In fact,
thank you. I appreciate that.
let's take a break, and we'll even have you back on the other side of the break. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest. We're responding to liberal proof text today, Matthew 20 and Matthew 23, a little bit more on that latter passage when we come back. Dr. Gibbs is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Matthew. You will find a link to them at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and child care, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at emmanuelhamilton.com.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps. lcms.org/youthcorps. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc., part of our series responding to liberal proof text. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest. We're talking about Matthew 23, 8 through 11, where Jesus says, "Call man no man father. Don't be called rabbi or instructor." Dr. Gibbs, what we've seen in both of these texts that we've looked at is there can be a tendency to misread it in a pretty serious way. And what you pointed out here before the break is that there is some sense the Christians must proceed with caution, and Jesus is cautioning us. But there are things like practical necessity, calling no man father. I'm sorry, my father is my father. I'm going to call him father. I think he likes being called father for probably, in his case, a lot of really good and sanctified reasons. So we have a practical necessity. You're not going to stop anybody from calling you professor or doctor, are you?
Well, I've decided that it would be too awkward and it would be unkind. And then very quickly, I know you don't feel this temptation, very quickly I would think myself to be very cool and avant-garde, and now I'm sinning again, darn it, right? So, I don't want to make a big deal about it. I actually have come to prefer, you know, if there's going to be a title by which I'm addressed, I've decided I like the term professor because it's kind of like pastor. A pastor, it's both a noun and a verb, right? So a pastor pastors people, he shepherds them. And so as a professor, my job is to profess things, right, to hopefully true things, Lutheran things, Christian things. So again, I think that would be to overread, to overtake with over literalistic seriousness what Jesus is saying here. I do think it's key that the Pharisees are criticized here for deliberately seeking the approval of men, right, and for loving it when it happens. I think that's important. That's right in the context. And so I think the application, the proper application, moves in that direction. But again, I think we would be fools, bigger fools than we are, to think that we are not tempted by these things, nor ever led into sin. The essential message of Matthew 23:1-12 is, don't be like them. And Jesus wouldn't say that if we weren't tempted to be just like them, right? But again, here's where you harmonize and fit the entire New Testament. You know, fathers, mothers, fathers don't provoke your children. I mean, Paul calls fathers, fathers, right? So again, you could take it too far, obviously, and do something silly with it. And yet there is also an application. I think if we pay attention to the problem that Jesus is addressing specifically, then that helps us to find a kind of a middle path towards taking his teaching seriously and applying it to our own situation. So,
and then again, with about a minute here, Dr. Gibbs, he tosses in at the end, the greatest among you shall be your servant, whoever humbles himself will exalt himself will be humbled, whoever humbles himself will be exalted, kind of setting up that no-win scenario for the man who wants
that's right.
to be exalted.
Exactly. This will sound maybe odd and shocking to some of the listeners. I mean, I need to remember that the primary, one of the primary motivations for what I happen to do, here at Concordia Seminary is it needs to be an expression of love and service to my students, right? Now, of course, loving a student might very well mean giving him a lousy grade if he turned in a lousy assignment, right? See, I get that. I'm not worried about that. But why am I here? What am I doing? Why? And same for a pastor, same for issues, et cetera, right? I mean, one of your primary motivations is to love your listeners and to encourage them and nurture them and to make yourself available for their sake, right? Even as the Son of Man did not come to serve, but to be served. So again, there's this powerful foundational truth that people like you or I would never even entertain, Todd, were it not for the fact that the Son of Man did precisely what he did. I just like to point out, it's not too late liturgically. Christ is risen.
He is risen indeed. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the Concordia Commentaries on Matthew. It is always a pleasure. I will I'll thank you by your preferred term, Jeff.
Thank you, Todd. It's nice to talk to you again.
When we come back, we're going to talk about first wave feminism with Rebecca Curtis. She has written a recent article for Touchstone magazine titled Emancipated Serf. She warns of the unintended consequences of even the quote-unquote good kind of feminism from the last century. Stay tuned. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
The faith once for all delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Since 1989, the Missouri Synod has allowed men without a divine call or ordination to publicly preach, teach, and administer the sacraments. This will be addressed at the Synod's convention this coming summer. On May 17th, Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be hosting a conference at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, discussing the biblical doctrine of the Holy Ministry and the Lutheran confession of it. All are welcome. Go to gottesdienst.blogspot.com for more information.
Here's what Chris in Moab, Utah, had to say about last summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I'm a new Lutheran, and I live in rural eastern Utah, which is the wilderness for someone like me. There aren't many confessional Lutherans around, so it was a great gift to share a weekend with like-minded people.
You can find out more about the 2016 Making the Case Conference Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th in Collinsville, Illinois at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.